Hello, everybody, and welcome to 25 Pearls of Wisdom of a 25-year-old teenager. That's me. This year, I turned 25, and I put together a little list of things that I've learned this year and all throughout my 20s so far, and I wanted to share them today because I remember when I was probably like 16 or 17, I was scrolling on my Tumblr dashboard and I found this like massive list of like advice from like an 80-year-old lady or something. And I remember that reading it somewhat changed my life. I think that was the moment when I realized that we all age and that I was going to age at some point. And reading some of the things that were in there, from like really basic things to more complex and more existential things, was kind of life-changing in a way. You know, like there were things that I resonated with, there were things that I did not really, and that just made me reflect and think of my very own list of learnings that I had made so far back then and things that I was still not sure or not aware of and that I probably wanted to have an opinion around. And I love reading people's, like, I don't know, there was like this little trend of like people sharing like their own, you know, like lessons each year, like epiphanies, or, you know, I think that just really also functions as like a mirror to whoever's reading or listening, just as for the person who's sharing. So yeah, today I'm sharing mine. This year happens to be probably the toughest year I've ever faced in my 25 years alive, but also it's composed of many, many beautiful moments full of learning and enlightenment and connection, and it was kind of really nicely balanced. And now that it's coming to an end, I can see these things that I wrote down during the summer when I turned 25, and they kind of make more sense, even more sense to me now. So it varies from things that I do every day or that I've found really useful to my routine, to my life, to deeper things that have enhanced my well-being and my mental health and my circle, my connections with others. So it's kind of like all over the place. Here and there, there's a few really intuitive things that you might have thought of when you were 5 years old. But, you know, it's part of my list. And so this is just me sharing it. I really hope that in some way or another it speaks to you. If it doesn't, I think it's even better, so that you kind of come up with your own list of things or values or philosophy that actually does work for you. I think that's really valuable, finding some differences somewhere and realizing that you actually think a different way and that you're so unique. So yeah, let's get started, shall we? I'm going to give a little bit of the backstory of how this list came to be and how it sort of became a little essay that I wrote that I published on my Medium, everybody. If you have Medium, please do follow me. But anyway, during the summer, I turned 25. I'm a Cancer. I'm emotional as fuck. I cry for everything. So, you know, like, there's always mixed feelings before my birthday. Always mixed feelings. So back in the summer, I was still living in Paris, and I was on my way to get some of my daily coffee. Okay, I would go to this coffee place every day because they would let me use my student discount and I would get cheaper coffee for my 9-hour days at the library. So I remember going to this cafe and it was already really warm and sunny and beautiful. And the girl who was working there on her shift, I would see her like 3 times a week. So we would already kind of like talk a little bit and, you know, catch up and whatever we could. And so she was like, hey, like, what are you doing for the summer? Like, am I going to see you again after today? Like, what's going on? And I was like, I'm just not really sure. I might go traveling or do something. Anyway, I ended up just telling her that my birthday was like around the corner, and she just gave me this like pack of four iced lattes, two matcha lattes and two iced coffees. And she was just like, oh, like, take them for free. It's fine. It's your birthday. And I was like, oh, this is so kind. I love this. And so I was going to meet up with my friend at the park. And as I was walking with my coffees in one hand and my phone and my bag, trying to balance my life, I was kind of like in this rush of like gratitude and like emotion. And like, there was something really weird going on inside of me besides, of course, the caffeine. And so I remember that I had these feelings and I was just kind of like thinking like, oh my goodness, I'm just going to be 25 once, you know, like all of these like cheesy lines that come with like birthdays, as in like, you're just going to be young once and shit like that. So I was just like walking and I was looking around me and I was like, this is such a beautiful moment because it just feels enough and it feels great and it does not feel scary in the way that I think of when I think of getting older, you know what I mean? And so this, for some reason, like this list of things and epiphanies and reflections that I've had this year so far started kind of hitting me, and to a point where it felt necessary to write them down. So as I was balancing everything with one hand, I took my phone on the other and I was typing in this list of 25 epiphanies, now called, now titled 25 Pearls of Wisdom. So this is what I'm bringing for you today. Yeah, so I hope you enjoy. Okay, let's go for the first one. And our first lesson is travel light as much as possible. This might sound a little bit hypocritical coming from me, because my friends who have seen me move around this year just know that I have no small baggage on me wherever I've moved. This year I lived in three continents, three different countries, and I had two really big moves from like a country to another. I had two semi-permanent homes, so like literally just like had to end two leases under my name. And yeah, it was kind of like a big move. And so, well, some big moves. And yeah, so my friends who have helped me, who I'm eternally grateful for, they know that this is kind of hypocritical of me to say. However, I mean, emotionally, travel light as much as possible. And I think, yeah, that applies emotionally as well. I realized this year as I was moving all of my stuff and myself and my connection to a place, my memories, my attachments, that it is quite extraordinary realizing that we can release things, experiences, emotions, and as much as we allow ourselves to do this, we will just have a better quality of life and emotional well-being. I think letting go of things that have hurt us, things that have been just really tough to digest, and yeah, just things that are honestly weighing us down, it's way easier to say this, but it's truly been life-changing for me, because to an extent, I think that we have the choice to nurture bonds, nurture people, relationships, habits that, you know, that we are carrying through life. And so I think that the moment that we realize that we also have emotional baggage, that we may have a very abundant baggage of things that we're choosing, that's when we can deliberately let go, release things, and then acquire some others that might be of better use to us. So that was a really big learning that I did this year as I traveled physically and realized the impact of physical and emotional baggage. Second, we have something that I learned the hard way, the really tough way, and it took me a while to understand. However, the more that I denied it and the more that I was attached to maybe a different outcome, the harder it became to not see this. So this is, there will not always be the ending that we want or need. However, we deserve to give ourselves a closure. We deserve to release something, even if the other side, the other person, the other circumstance does not seem to give us some sort of goodbye, some sort of feeling that it's over. I think this is quite common in relationships when we feel like from one side it's over, but the other side it's still either attached, or the other person is maybe not giving us the words that we need to feel at peace with this ending or with this closure. And at least in my case, it happens to me that I'm usually like quite kind of like the hopeless romantic, thinking of like, oh, maybe someday I will receive, you know, like a text saying the things that, you know, they should have said, or maybe someday it's gonna happen, you know. But I realize that maybe we should not believe that. It's just not ideal, especially if we do want to travel light in life with our emotional baggage. So I think we can create those closures that give us peace, those closures where we release emotions that are weighing us down, or pain and grief or gratitude or joy, even if the other side, the other person, is not really willing to, or is not putting anything from that side. So I think there's various ways of releasing and, you know, letting go and whatever. Some people write letters and burn them. Like, some people talk to an empty chair, visualizing the other person. I don't know, whatever you do. I just think that, yeah, that sometimes we need to create our own closures and be at peace with them, because if we just keep waiting for the other party to tell us everything we need to hear to be at peace, we might wait a very long time, and it's not worth it. We deserve to feel at peace, and we deserve closures, as hard as that could be. We deserve them. Number three, resentment weighs us down. We deserve to live without it. This is so obvious as well. There's a saying that stuck with me, and it says, resentment, it's like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. And that's something that I've also realized, that if we're able to, we should not carry, we should release. And it's definitely something that we should work towards. And I think it's a practice that we get better at, we cultivate every day, and it's very much worth investing time and energy doing, because resentment just like sticks and then grows and then affects us, affects our other relationships, and it just does not really have a purpose in our lives. I think once we realize where it's coming from and its role and everything else. So resentment does not actually help us in any way. Number four, you are your home. If you're an OG to this podcast, you know that that's the very first episode of this podcast. And that's something that I've lived by since I'm very young and I moved overseas, and my concept of home changed. It's still something that changes every so often, and I have to revisit and understand and be flexible with, especially when there's so much expectancy, when you're young, when you're a woman, when you're in your 20s, you know, like there's different expectations personally, socially, culturally. So this is a concept that I constantly look at and try to understand what makes it up and what conforms it. And so to an extent, I think that we are our own homes, because wherever we are, we have this capacity of creating a home, creating a safe space for us, creating an atmosphere, or finding an atmosphere where we feel this warmth, where we feel held and seen and loved, no matter where we are. I've experienced that, you know, without family in the same place, without friends in the same place, restarting my life so many times, I have discovered that we in fact cultivate a home where we are. However, on the other hand, my most recent discovery has been that what's around us is also our home. And I'm not speaking of like a home, like a physical structure. I'm speaking of the people around us, the community, who we see every day is our home. And to an extent, we also have the choice of who we're letting in to our lives. You know, we are choosing and we're nurturing those connections. And from there, we can reflect how that makes us feel, if that actually does feel safe, like a home, or if that feels a little bit more threatening, or if that feels just kind of like the opposite feeling of a home. You know, I think that's a very great point to reflect on what home feels like, and if the people around me or the circles that I'm in do feel like a home as well. Number 5, document your youth in some way or another, even if it's just for yourself. This came from the list that I saw on Tumblr when I was younger, and it's something that it's part of my life philosophy, I think. I'm just so passionate by storytelling and images and, you know, just kind of like, yeah, creating art and sharing feelings, emotions, different eras through work, through visual work, that I have very much enjoyed having, like, keeping track of everything that's happened in my 20s and before then, you know, like taking photos and filming things and writing and doing, you know, and paintings and things like that has just been incredible and also very healing. I have really enjoyed looking back at those times and having some like physical material, just like things that I can work with and see where I was at. And that has enabled me to reconnect to parts of myself that I had forgotten about or that otherwise would be really hard to access. So I think that if you do it for social media, that's cool. If you do it for yourself, that's even better. Whatever that looks like for you, definitely I would encourage you to document your life in some way or another. If you don't want to share it, that's perfect. If you want to share it, that's also cool. You know, whatever you choose, do it for yourself and for your future self as well. I think it will be really fun/sad, nostalgic to look back at moments in life where you will maybe learn things, see yourself through kinder eyes. I don't know. It's just been amazing for me documenting everything. And yeah, it's something that I definitely live by and I really enjoy. So I encourage you to take those photos. Number 6, host dinners with your loved ones, even if that circle changes. One of my favorite things on earth is cooking and sharing food with people. 2021, 2022 were years of sharing and connecting with so many different people. And I went from like one social circle to another. So there were many different like social bubbles that I participated in that I was part of. And then I would move on into another one. So I really enjoyed having moments where we would just have dinners. It sounds really kind of weird, but having potlucks became my passion. And it was always really nice, like a perfect excuse, just, you know, getting together and having some food and having some drinks and having a great time with whoever that is. You know, I just, probably one of the things that I found that I saw in common between my social circles was the fact that I had some really nice dinners with each one of those circles. So having some moments to share with your loved ones, even if that circle changes, I think that's really cool. In my experience, my passion is potlucks. It's just something that I cannot even describe. It's wonderful. I adore them. Moving on, 7, eat more whole foods. I am no dietitian. I'm no one to say this, but at the same time, I am. So eating more whole foods just makes your life better if you have access to them. They should not be, you know, I don't think that I just hate the fact that when we think of like healthy food and like good food, we think of really expensive things. And unfortunately that happens sometimes in some, you know, in some countries, in some stores. I don't know. I think it really depends of like the place and each person's possibilities to acquire products, fresh produce. But I think it should not be a luxury. And sometimes eating whole foods could be more more accessible than relying on highly processed foods. And so eating whole foods during my 20s, like kind of like making it a value, like a core value, became something really important for me because I had never felt healthier in my life. And yeah, I started consuming local things and more fresh ingredients. And I truly feel like my quality of life improved and changed. And I feel just with more energy, and I feel even like my personal economies are better just because I don't spend as much money buying products. So yeah, eating more whole foods is really great to an extent. Like, however you can access them, if you can, whole foods are really great for you. Number 8, learn the names of those who make your coffee or work at the store you go to, etc. Kind of like know the people in your community, know who you see every day, even if it's, you know, people that you see on the street, on the store, at the cafe, you know, at the gate. This to me, I think I learned this from my mom. She always told me to call people by their names, and to whenever they would say hi to me, you know, using my name, I should also use their name. You know, like she was just like, that's such like that's like just really nice. And that's like really not just polite, but that just makes it kind of, I don't know, just like nicer and more personal. And I do agree. I think especially now where we barely look at each other in the eye, having some sort of, even if it's superficial, but some sort of connection with the other person, you know, knowing their name and saying hi to them and establishing some sort of relationship with those people in your community just inherently makes you feel more grounded and more connected to that space, to, you know, to that city or to that area. So that's something that I've definitely experienced wherever I am. This year that I moved back to a country where I had not been in a long time, and you know, I started going to like my favorite places, and I kind of like became like the customer that was there like every day, or you know, like every week on a really regular basis. It was just, yeah, I just felt way better, and I think it made it so much easier for me to adapt somewhere where I would know people's names, and you know, they would call me by their name and by my name. And even if, you know, I probably initially, like before I had friends, people at the restaurants or at the cafes, they would already know my name. You know what I mean? Like I would know theirs, they would know mine. Those were my first conversations with, you know, with human beings where I, in places where I did not know anybody. So I think that makes things, that makes daily life just more enjoyable. And having connections like that is really important, I think. Yeah. Number 9, take the sun when you can, as much as you can, and enjoy it. Yeah, I mean, pretty intuitive. Sun's great for us. And if we live in places where the sun does not come out 365 days a year, then we might appreciate sun more than people who do have sun all year long. That's something that happened to me. I grew up in the sun, and then I moved to different places where there was no sun in some seasons during the year, long periods of time. So now I appreciate sun so much, and I feel like when there's sun out, it kind of dictates how your day is gonna go in a weird way. And so kind of like having moments of more intentional moments outside, you know, like while the sun's out, or you know, just kind of like enjoying something as simple as sunlight really did make my life better. So taking the sun's really good for you. And if you can't take the sun, then have some vitamin D. It's also really great. And most of us have deficiency. So taking the sun when we can is really good. Number 10, walk as much as you can. Make walking a consistent habit. Also pretty self-explanatory. Walking's really great for you. I think that in places like in North America, where we're mostly used to driving, walking might look even like something impossible or a luxury or something that not everybody has the time to do. However, wherever you are, if you have the space and the time to walk, it is just really good. I've really been lucky living in places where it's pretty walkable, and walking everywhere or walking as much as I can has really also made my life better. It feels like some intentional time to just like rewind and move my body and have some activity in, like some physical activity. Because some days I just realized that if I did not walk the dog or if I did not walk to the store, I would not be doing anything else physically. So I think walking, actually, it's really good to maintain mental health and... yeah, and our lungs pretty healthy. So walking, if we can, definitely let's feed it and make it a habit. Number 11, I started saying thank you to my vegetables before eating them. I started being very, very grateful to genuinely just like the land for giving me food, and to nature, and whatever's out there in the natural world. I think I started becoming more aware of where things were coming from, especially my food. So I remember that when we would make dinners and stuff in my house, we would always kind of like say thank you to all the journey that brought that food to me, and like the land, and like everything that came to play to make the food in front of me. So it definitely does sound pretty hippie, but it kind of became something that I started doing, especially like just gratitude. I think that just comes down to feeling grateful and being grateful for the food that's in front of us. And especially that becomes easier being grateful when you visualize everything, like the journey that the food has gone through to be in front of you. So yeah, saying thank you to Mother Earth for food. Why not? Number 12, if you can cook instead of buying, cook. Do it. Cook. Cooking is a great part of my life. Is one of my big loves. I love cooking, and again, I see it as a means of connecting with people and of feeding ourselves, feeding our bodies, feeding our, I think it goes deeper than that, actually, you know, feeding our desires, our emotional bodies. You know, I think cooking is so much fun, and cooking could save you also so much money. Not everybody has the time to cook, but if you do, it's just really fun and it's really great. So cooking, definitely something that we should all at some point connect with, and also kind of like keeping track. I think this is at some point is another lesson sort of thing, but having like your core recipes, like things that you can kind of like cook and recreate wherever you are, also gives you like that sense of like home and comfort. That's something that's definitely really helps me, kind of like through cooking, recreating moments and yeah, moments in time and feelings. So cooking, I find it as a very profound activity and pleasure. Number 13, learn the stories of those who are older than you. If it's your family members or your ancestors, even better. I think this is something that I learned from the Maori culture, the indigenous culture in Aotearoa, New Zealand, which is knowing about your ancestors, about people who were here before you. And I don't think we grow up, at least in North America, we don't really grow up with that concept. In Mexico, a little bit, I feel, with like Day of the Dead, for example, we have we honor memory, and we have we're aware of who our grandparents and uncles and aunties were, but I feel like in the West we do lack that sense of belonging to a wider community, to like a wider social body. So I think that we should be curious, and we should foster these, like, connecting to those stories of those who were here before us, of those who are older than us, you know. I think stories just bridge knowledge and experience and, you know, many wonderful things from the past into our present. So, and then from our present to our future. So I do think that there's so much power in stories, and everybody, absolutely everybody, has incredible stories that can nurture us and can make us reflect and can, you know, open our minds and just be of use in some way or another. Number 14, it's the one that I said maybe a couple of months ago, and it's learning or having some sort of recipe repertoire. It's knowing or having some sort of like recipe repertoire of what brings you comfort, brings you to places of joy, happiness, light, so that you can recreate wherever you are. As easy as that. Number 15, learn a foreign language if it's in your possibilities. This is honestly something that I will always say changed my life forever, and did also change how my brain works and how I see the world. And it truly did just kind of really alter my state of mind, and something that I'm extremely grateful for. And I think everybody should, everybody can benefit from learning a new language, and everybody should do it at some point in their lives. I really wish it was more accessible to everybody, but I think that it's something that we all can do. It really makes me, it bums me out so much when I hear someone saying that, you know, they suck at languages, or that they were never able to enjoy languages at school or whatever. And sometimes it's very out of our control, especially when the school system's involved, and that sometimes leaves some people with the impression that they're just not good at it and that it's not their thing. When in reality, I think we all have the ability to learn things and to learn a new language. So I would definitely encourage whoever's listening, if you have the time and space to do so. Even if you sucked at school, even if they told you that you sounded awful and, you know, whatever, I definitely think you should give it a go at least one time in your life. Definitely so worth it. And it's honestly so amazing, you know, it's like genuinely building new connections in your brain, and like you start thinking differently, and then you start kind of like questioning so much of the things that you know in your own language, and then you realize that it's actually culture, not your own thoughts. It's a super interesting process. So learning a new language is a very humbling experience, and very very satisfying. Number 16, if you can tip somebody, do it, especially if the person is young or old. older. I mean, in some countries you don't really need to tip because the wages are kind of slightly better, or, you know, they can get by without tips. However, there's other places where tips are required, and tips are definitely very much needed. So me having worked, and those of us who have worked hospitality jobs or working class jobs or any sort of job that just, you know, gets you by to pay your bills and that's it. It's just really, when you're young especially and you're a little bit more vulnerable and, you know, you're a student or, you know, you're whatever, at least me as a student, I always appreciated so much when somebody gave me a tip. And yeah, it's definitely something that that older people also do experience, because they're also vulnerable, more vulnerable, some of them. I make sure that if I can, if it's in my possibility, I tip, just because I know I can kind of understand how it's like, and yeah, how we actually need to be better, to do better with our working policies Anyway, 17. If you lock eyes with a stranger, try to hold the gaze. This is something that I am still working on, and I'm pretty sure it's definitely going to transcend my 2023 learning list, just because it's something that I'm still working on and I do need to remind myself of every single day. I started noticing with myself that with myself that whenever I would lock eyes with somebody, I would just like immediately look away and like immediately like avoid that moment of connection or contact, you know? And I think it's become way easier to avoid those things and to like maintain ourselves fully disconnected from connecting with others, you know, while we're walking, when we're at the supermarket, when we're out in the world. We should not lose that instinct to connect with others, or we should not lose that capacity of just, you know, locking eyes with a stranger. And I don't know, I just wonder, I'm like, what are we so scared of, you know? Like, I was thinking, I was like, why am I so, like, why do I shy away? Like, why am I not able to do that? And then when somebody locks eyes with me and they just kind of, like, smile at me, or, you know, hold the gaze a little bit longer, I'm just kind of like, wow, this is amazing. Like, it feels really good. And it's just, even if I'm having, like, the worst day ever and I'm feeling ridiculously bad, and then that happens to me, it just boosts me, and it just kind of gives me this like sense of, oh wow, yeah, like I'm actually part of something, or of something else, or somebody looked at me, like somebody acknowledged my existence, you know? I think it's a pretty profound thing that we should not lose just because we shy away or we feel like we're not used to it anymore. So I think that if we can, we should enhance that. And a learning that one of my friends shared with me a couple of years ago: when you look at somebody in the eyes, you just, in your mind, wish them the best. Like, just like that, you know, you look at somebody in the eyes and you consciously kind of like bring your awareness in and you wish them the best. That became something so life-changing for me, because it kind of became a really powerful, a powerful way to be intentional about those moments of very raw and real connection. And that immediately just made me look at people, I feel like it just made me more tolerant. Like, it just reminded me that we're all people, and that we all have dreams and aspirations, and we all struggle, and we all want to feel good and happy and loved. And wishing that upon somebody, even if it's in your mind, that does really feel very expansive. So yeah, that's my reflection on that. Still working on it, because it just still terrifies me, locking eyes with people and not looking away. Number 18, travel with a backpack at least once in your life. Connecting to the first point where people will say, oh my goodness, Barbara, you're so hypocritical. How dare you? Well, let me tell you that I have traveled with a backpack, and it's so liberating and it's amazing. So if you ever have the opportunity to, I would definitely recommend it. Last time I traveled with a backpack only was this summer. I took some holidays just by myself, and I love having stuff. I really do. I don't feel like I have excessive things that I don't use. I feel like I'm very intentional with my things as well. I don't own a few things, I'm going to say, because I do love my stuff. I don't know. I just kind of like have a lot of like attachment to some things, like books and notebooks and like, you know, just like kind of memories of other places, whatever, I don't know. Anyway, but the thing is, traveling with a backpack kind of like enabled me to connect to essentialism, to the things that actually do serve me and the things that I do need, rather than what I just want. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like those things that I need. And so I feel by having less things, there was less distraction. Therefore, there was more time to enjoy, like more energy and attention for what was happening, what I was living. And so it was really great. It was really amazing. So traveling with a backpack is pretty life-changing. If you've never done it, definitely suggest it. I suggest it. And if you've done it, well, you might understand me, or you might just be like, I don't like it, it's not for me. And that's also valid. Number 19, write letters. Yeah, this summer I enjoyed so much sitting in cafes and buying postcards and writing postcards to my friends all over and my family, and just writing little pieces of just like little lines, you know, about my day or about whatever, and just send them. And then I would, my friends would text me and be like, oh my goodness, I just received your letter, that's so cute, da da da, you know, that's just really nice. And ironically, everybody, okay, I've never, well, I have received some letters in my life, but not as many as I've sent. And I do want people to keep sending letters and to like make, I don't know if like make it a thing, but like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I enjoy letters, and I think we should not let them go. Number 20, if it's not there, life will keep showing you that it is not there in one way or another. Number 20, if it's not there. Number 20, if it's not there and we don't acknowledge it, life will keep showing us until we decide to move. Something I also learned the very hard way, and I've been kind of carrying along for a while now, yeah, and until the moment that I decided to stop and actually just look at the facts and look at the signs and, you know, trust life, I guess, with its criteria. I think that many times we ignore our intuition, or we ignore our gut feelings, and sometimes we do kind of know when we're not supposed to be there, or we kind of know when it's time to go. We should, like, we know when it's time to go, but sometimes we don't listen, or we just want to stay there, or there's attachment. Sometimes like situations will keep getting more intense, and like things and feelings will just keep increasing until the point where we feel like it's impossible to be there anymore, or it's unbearable, or it's agony, you know? And until that point, we will get to see that and actually hopefully move and or leave, or, you know, choose something different. So I think that when we see the signs, we should just listen to them and tag along, just because otherwise things will just keep getting worse until we realize that it's actually not there, you know? Number 21, find out where the things that you consume come from. This comes a lot from the side of the kind of like the question of this kind of comes from like the principle of, or the questioning of like, is there some sort of ethical form of consumption? Many would say that it's kind of like an oxymoron, saying like ethical business or ethical, you know, ethical business making or whatever. I just think that if we kind of like reflect where the things that we consume come from, we have a choice as consumers, you know, whatever we like it or not, whatever people say, you know, there's always going to be people that will say that that does not matter, that does not make a difference. But I do believe that consumers have a choice, and the market determines to an extent what is given to us, you know, like they do make sure that there's consumers for, you know, for like a philosophy, for like a trend, for everything. So looking at like some movements gaining more presence, there's things like, there's products, there's businesses, there's, you know, initiatives with like values, like kind of like more value-based things, and they're kind of like responding to those needs, to those necessities, you know, of something a little bit more honest, a little bit more transparent, a little bit just better, no? So I do think that we should instigate where the things that we consume are coming from. You know, many, many times, just because we don't know better, we are, we are supporting certain businesses or certain initiatives that are maybe not that good on the other side. So if it's in our possibilities to support other forms of sourcing goods, of making business, I think we should, if it's in our hands. And I'm saying this just from a perspective of me coming from a country where there's a lot of exploitation of like foreign enterprises, you know, like primary goods. Anyway, I don't know, just like it kind of makes my blood boil just thinking of like all of that happening, and just because people don't know about it, or like they don't really even instigate on, you know, what that is, we just keep supporting that. Whereas if we know, we at least have the choice in our own way, in our own dimension, we can do something about it. I don't know. I'm not willing to sort this out, but I think it's, to me personally, it's really changed my way of consuming, just knowing where things are from. Because even if I know that I could not afford buying everything sustainably or everything ethically sourced or everything B Corp certified, at least, you know, the way in which I consume changes, you know, I don't do it as mindlessly as I would have. If I can, I do source from different places, you know, like I would rather support local businesses or my friend or my neighbor doing something rather than going to Walmart and buying it for, I don't know, like 8 times less, you know. Moving on, consuming cinema, especially foreign cinema, has opened the doors to me in many ways. That's kind of like a very first person reflection. Cinema has been amazing. This is very film student of me to say, or should I say film graduate, but consuming cinema, it's truly amazing. It's truly eye-opening. There's this platform that I adore. It's called Mubi, M-U-B-I, and it's full of foreign, like beautiful foreign cinema. All the many of the movies that go to film festivals that we see and then we never see anywhere else again, like they don't have them anywhere else. So consuming that kind of cinema could be quite depressing, you know, like there's some art house cinema, you know, is kind of, you know, known for portraying stories that are fully the full on opposite of like entertainment, blockbuster, mainstream media. But I think it's so eye-opening and it's so educational and it's a means of knowledge. And if it's available to us, I think we should look at cinema also from that perspective. So in my case, it's just been such an eye-opening, amazing medium to learn from. So cinema, it's so amazing. Yeah, I just love cinema and it's really been great in my life. Moving on. Number 23, which I also learned the very hard way, is silence also is an answer. Silence can also be as loud as noise. It also is a space of learning and peace. Biggest one I would say is that silence is an answer. I think that we kind of look at silence as like this like entity with like of emptiness in a way. But I do think that that silence is an answer, whether you know, that involves like somebody like in a relationship, like a significant other or a conflict or, you know, like a friendship situation going on. But that also applies to life, like to life opportunities, to things that are not happening, to places of like more of less noise, of simply silence. You know what I mean? Like, I think that also is an answer, and we must not look at it like a zero. We must look at it like a different space that also offers an answer. I don't know if that makes any sense, but in my mind it does. I think that after I learned this from ending a relationship where I did not, like, it just took me so long to get out of there because I would not see silence as anything. Like, I looked at it as like a whatever, you know. But then I was like, I think silence does really play a huge part, and I should acknowledge that. So So yeah, silence is also an answer. Number 24, we should validate ourselves first. We need to show up and talk about ourselves in any way that we choose to, and we each define, rather than waiting for somebody else to define us or what we do or how we are like. I think this comes very hand in hand with like the imposter syndrome, with being a woman in society, with being an artist and kind of waiting for that validation or kind of waiting for that amount of money to make until you call yourself an artist. I don't really know. I think that comes from there. And I've learned also the really tough way that nobody is probably going to get. I mean, some people do live like this and that's amazing. So lucky. But like many of us will just not get the recognition that we deserve or we want externally. And that does not mean that we should not give it to us by ourselves. You know what I mean? Like, I think that the moment where I realized this and I was like, why am I waiting for somebody to, you know, look at how talented I am or like the effort that I'm putting in or like how smart I am or, you know, whatever good thing there was about me, you know, I was like, why am I waiting for that moment? Like, I can just, you know, like I can look at myself through my own eyes and talk about myself through my own perspective rather than allowing others to enforce a narrative or enforce characteristics or enforce something onto me. You know what I mean? So I noticed at the moment where I started choosing the way that I was presenting myself, like showing up in the world and talking about myself, and when I was validating myself and my work, that's when people started kind of like falling into that as well. You know what I mean? Like they were kind of like following that path because you kind of give them no option. You know what I mean? It's like somebody can look at you and like can say whatever they want, and that's their own projections, right? Like somebody's externalizing what they see in themselves through you or their own thoughts or own opinions, and we will never be fully free of that. There's always going to be that. However, that is not the way that we should define ourselves, you know? At the end of the day, we are the ones who know about us, about our work, about who we are, everything around those lines. And I think that that when people see that you do know and that you do validate yourself and that you do live under your own terms, that's when people who respect you or who care for you or just anyone really who is not a dick and is not saying whatever projection they have, those good people will just kind of follow along and be like, okay, like I'm not going to question what you're saying about yourself because you do know who you are. You know what I mean? Like you are an artist because you make art and you call yourself an artist and that makes you an artist. You know what I mean? So I think that as women, especially, we mostly wait for somebody to say that we are good enough or validate what we do. But in fact, we need to give ourselves merit for that first so that people can actually see that we do respect ourselves in that manner. And they just kind of like go through that path as well. You know, like we need to make that, to build that that kind of like base by ourselves so that people, when they come around, they do know where to step, sort of. At least that's how I've seen it and how it's truly worked for me and how it's made me feel better. Lastly, number 25 is probably the biggest learning that I've made during my 20s and something that I've lived and it's been deeply healing and kind of contradicts a lot of what I learned when I was younger about love and about self-love and acceptance. And that is the lesson, not what I learned. That is, we deserve love and feeling enough even if we're going through a moment where we feel like we do not deserve it or where we cannot give it to ourselves. So I remember when I was growing up, my mom would tell me things like, if you don't love yourself, how do you expect others to love you? Which to an extent, it does have a lot of wisdom. It's a statement that does have it does make sense, right? There were moments when I was just not able to look at myself through kind eyes, like when I was not able to love myself and I was just really struggling with like I don't know, like self-image or confidence or, you know, whatever, like growing up during teenage, it's really hard sometimes to like yourself. You know, when you're a young adult, it's also really hard sometimes after a breakup. You know, there's just moments when you just can't really fulfill those requirements to love yourself. And when I was going through that, I was just like, I don't deserve love. Like I'm not deserving of love, and that's my fault, or, you know, like my responsibility, because I'm not giving it to me. But then I started, I think that when people around me, really beautiful and caring people, noticed that I was like struggling, like they started giving me love, and like they would give me love and be so kind to me. And through that external kind of like source of love and light, it kind of became something that I was internalizing, and it was kind of like a way of like feeding or nurturing like a little plant that was just dry. And then, you know, and I think I learned that way, that even if we, like, we're always deserving of love, you know, like it is super important to have your own, like you as your own source of love. But also, if you don't feel like you can give yourself some love, you still deserve it, and you will still find it outside, because people will understand, and loving people will just be loving to you, you know. Like I think, and I'm like, if somebody, like one of my friends, or honestly anybody who's like struggling, I mean, I would definitely just like be kind to them, and like if I can do something to help, I would, you know what I mean. I think sometimes we're really harsh on ourselves, and we forget that people actually do know sometimes what we're going through and do understand that, and we all are humans and share similar experiences, and loving people will love us regardless, you know. And sometimes if that love and light does not come from ourselves, it does come from the outside, and that reminds us that we are loving and that we deserve love and we're lovable, you know. So that's something that I have learned to let into my life, to accept, to embrace, and to live by and be very grateful for. Every single day, I'm so grateful for those people who gave me that nurturing when I did not have it, and who served some sort of role as a nurturing home when I could not be my home, where I was just like really, really struggling. And that reminded me of the kindness in the world and the light in. I'm so sorry for the dogs on the back. I'm so sorry. Just out of nowhere, they would just like started going crazy. But yes, these are my 25 pearls of wisdom of my 25-year-old life. I really hope you enjoyed. If you did, make sure you share this episode. Make sure you rate the podcast, and if you want to talk to me, message me on Instagram at Bimbarella and at Amora Podcast. I really hope you have a wonderful rest of your day, of your evening, of the month, and I'll talk to you on the next episode. Take care.